It's Chatter on Books, and if you think this introduction is boring, you try writing the copy. I'm Jamie McIntyre. Here's Tori Clark.
Okay, we are going to talk in just a few minutes with Mary Roach, who is a 7-time best-selling author, and she has great titles for her books, like Grunt and Stiff and Fuzz. And now she's got this book, Replaceable You. I drove my friends and relatives bananas reading this book because I kept going, oh my God, wait till you hear about this. Her book, which is so well-researched, so wonderfully written, funny, is all about the centuries and centuries and centuries in which we've been trying to replace, improve, enhance various body parts. And when I say various, head, shoulders, knees, and toes does not capture.
Everything. Soup to nuts, as we say.
Soup to nuts.
That's a one way to put it.
Okay. But Mary's going to have to wait because, as everybody knows, I spend a lot of time in my car and I listen to a lot of things. And I'm always obsessed with murders and murder mysteries and great courtroom dramas. There's a new Murdoch murder South Carolina thing coming out on Hulu, I think in 2 days. I'll be listening to. But I'm listening to this podcast put together by Megan Clougherty and some other people at WTOP. Alert mm-hmm. listeners. TOP is the main traffic
all
radio.
News all the time.
All news, yeah. All news all the time station in DC. Quite good, always good. And a few years ago, there was a horrible scene in a very fancy part of Northwest DC in which a couple and their 10-year-old son and the housekeeper were brutally, they were essentially held hostage, brutally murdered, killed, house set on fire. The whole thing heavily covered by TOP and others. So now there's this podcast out, which was a look back. It's called 22 Hours, because that was the critical period of time. 22 Hours, a look back. I'm listening to it. And again, I'm sure if anybody from TOP is listening, I know many people, in addition to Megan Clougherty, worked on this thing, but it was so well done. I know every major murder crime thing that's ever happened. Right. And how they put this podcast together was so well done and so thoughtful and so gripping. You just want to keep listening, keep listening, keep listening. And you learn that the DC court in which the trial was held of the guy who was accused of the murders, in the DC courts, they would record everything, but reporters couldn't record things, no TV, no audio, and the court itself would release transcripts, but not the audio. So when Megan and team are looking back in this 22 hours look back, and they really, it was so important because the man who was accused, Derek Wendt, he took the stand. By the way, people, never take the stand. If you're accused of something, never turns out well. But he takes the stand. And there was a prosecutor who was incredibly important to this, obviously. So they wanted to recreate that. And I'm not really paying this part as they're setting this up. But then the next thing you know, you hear this actor playing the part of the accused. You hear this actor playing the part of the prosecutor. And listen, and I'm listening to the accused. And I'm listening, going, this sounds, that's Claude. This is Claude. Or this is Claude's twin brother that we didn't know he had.
Correct.
Oh my God. I'm like driving off the road on 16th Street listening to this. Claude, please to explain.
So, yeah, they were working on it, and they got to a part where they thought it would be really cool to kind of recreate the whole thing. And so I think it was, Megan Clougherty and Julia Ziegler reached out to me and said, hey, here's what we're working on. Here's what we're thinking. We need this voice. We think you'd be perfect for it. I'm like, well, what is that supposed to mean? I don't know. I did it. And I'm telling you, when they asked me to do it, I just thought it was something cool. I'd never done anything like that before. I'll engineer podcasts and edit podcasts, and usually they're all like, like shows, live to tape shows. There's never like a recreated drama of anything. And so I thought it would be a great idea. And I worked. I mean, they sent me a script. I tried my best to, to try to sound like a killer and, whatever that's supposed to sound like, or, at least someone who's on trial. And I had a great time. And, we went in and recorded and did second takes, third takes and stuff like that. And it's so funny how people will hear your voice. I was receiving like text messages because it came out years ago, but text messages, calls, emails, like, are you the guy on the 22 hours? Like, yeah, that's me. So
are you the murderer?
For a short stint in my life, I felt important, and I felt like people knew who I was. It was fun. I loved it.
Okay. Did it? So we were saying before we started, David, the podcast is so well done, and their coverage of it and going back and looking back at the trial and everything that happened, they put it together so, so well. When people are done listening to this podcast, they should listen to that one. And I learned a ton. But Claude, as the accused, why did he do it? So just to recap for people, it was a horrible thing where this guy in his young 30s gets into the house, holds the couple, the 10-year-old and the housekeeper hostage, tortures them, sets them on fire. It's awful. And this podcast explains so much, but why did you do it, Claude?
It falls short of explaining why exactly I did it. But I'm telling you, while I was doing that, it captivated my life for a 2 to 3 week stretch. So I'm listening to episodes, listening to recordings, reading stuff from the trial, and it was the only thing that was in my head for a couple of weeks while we recorded my specific
Wow.
part. But yeah, after doing it, I mean, I listened back to it, and I still feel like there was just a few things that I'm like, I just don't get this. I don't understand why this happened. And
Yeah,
yeah.
no, nobody could explain the brutality of it.
Right, exactly, and I think that's more so what, brought to
Wow. Okay, I was talking to my so-called adult children about this, and they said, "Did he get paid a lot?" And I said, "Well, I'm guessing radio probably not, but we hope you got paid well for it." And did you have any concerns about playing an accused murderer?
Oh no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm the type of guy. So, I mean, it's October, right? I'm the type of person in October, I'm watching horror films at least twice a day.
Oh
I
God,
totally get
I
into
can't
it.
do it.
If I
How do you
could
do that?
somehow land a job with a rebirth of the second rebirth of the Halloween series, I don't mind Michael Myers chasing me down, stabbing me in the
Nice.
back of the neck. That's fine. I'll do that. That's cool. So, you know,
Oh my God.
I thought it was great. I had
Yeah.
no issue at all doing
It was really, really well done, and you carried it all the way through. It was a lot. Obviously, not as many hours he spent on the stand, but it was a lot. I just
Yeah,
look
it was a
very
lot.
professional. It's another career, Claude.
There
Acting.
you go.
Might help me out a little bit more because man is getting ready for college in about what 5 years, and so maybe I need to get into voice
You
acting.
should. You should.
Oh my
It's
God,
so.
Claude.
It could be very lucrative. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
We would come watch. Okay, that's a good segue
Absolutely.
to this. David, we've asked you about the offspring off at college. We've
Yes.
not asked you how you and your better half, Diane, are doing as empty nesters.
We're doing fine. We're not talking to each other. I think it's the best way to do it. She stays downstairs. I stay upstairs. It works out fine. We see each other for lunch occasionally. We'll go out to dinner every once in a while.
I think it's a little bit of a transition. When Brian and I finally, Charlie goes off to school, the youngest, and it was because it's just with raising kids, it's just logistics, right? It's all logistics. That's what you do. And
Yeah.
then they're gone, and so you don't have that, and you're not tripping over the giant sneakers and things like that. It took us a while to kind of go, oh, this is why I married you.
Right.
Until we got
Well,
into a different battle rhythm, if you will.
yeah, it may be different. I think both of you are pretty extroverted. My wife is a real introvert. So, I always tell people, COVID, I don't know that she really noticed much of a difference because she just looked. And
That's great.
it's okay. I love her, but yeah, it's so she's fine. Like, don't worry about her. It's me that's
Who
probably the
misses them
basket case.
more, you or Diane?
I probably Diane, because she was with them more than I was. I was just the stupid dad coming in telling them buck up and stop crying and all sort of, what stupid
Quit throwing
men
the
do.
ball against the side of the house. Stop that.
Exactly. No, I like that. There's actually a hole in the wall of our attic that we have yet to fill, because I don't want to fill it. That came from me and our youngest son playing tackle upstairs.
Oh,
Yeah.
nice. Oh, no, keep it. Just put a nice frame around it.
Was running, and I took him into the, it was the textbook tackle. You would love it. Wrapped him up, took him to the ground. One of our shoulders went through the wall. I don't know whose.
Just keep it. When we were kids, my sisters, who were good athletes and I were not, played tennis. And when they couldn't get on the courts to practice, they'd be in the backyard. There's a little back driveway hitting tennis balls against the back of the house. And they were pretty good, but swear to God, once a week, you hear a window go out.
Oh,
And it happened
sure.
so often, and my dad would fix the windows. He could fix the windows. It just happened so often that he just had a nice piece of plywood that he would put up there so he could go back and fix the window.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, a little bit of housekeeping, and then we got to talk about the pitch. I have an update on the pitch. So housekeeping, November 10th, Damaris Smith, longtime
Yes.
NFL player rep, book called Turf Wars, which is pretty provocative about the NFL, battle of the greedy owners versus players, etc. But it seems to be doing very, very well. Live in-person taping of Chatter at Caddies on Cordell. For the hundreds of thousands of people listening, Caddies on Cordell is a great sports bar on Cordell in Bethesda. I have spent way too much time there and too much money there, but we're going to do it live in person there. First 20 people get a free copy of his book. It turns out that Dee is a good friend of Ronnie, the owner. And so somehow there's going to be free drinks involved. I'm not sure if I'm paying for
There
them,
you
somebody is. But David, tell us a little bit about Damar Smith and the significance of this book, if you don't mind.
I mean,
You've
you
known him
know,
forever.
yes, you know, there's the history of labor negotiations in the NFL is, you know, I don't know that many people are all that interested in it, but it is kind of fascinating. I go back to Ed Garvey and
Yeah.
the late Gene Upshaw. That's how long
Gene
ago I
Upshaw.
started doing this. There is always kind of it's different for football players because the vast majority of NFL player contracts are not guaranteed. They are at-risk employees. Basically, they can be cut for any reason as long as it's performance related.
Kind of like people who work for the government? No, I didn't say that.
So they're always. If you hear a guy signed a 5-year contract, what he really signed is 5 1-year contracts. You know what I mean? Like, and so the team, he has to prove himself every year to get the money that he's owed. Whereas in the NBA, every contract is guaranteed. Like the second you sign a contract in the NBA, the whatever money they say is on the contract, that's what you're getting. Like whether they cut you, trade you, doesn't matter. You get paid that money. So the power dynamic between the NFL owners and their players is just so much different than it is for NBA players by way of comparison. And baseball's kind of in the middle, in terms of guarantees. So it's difficult. It's difficult for the players, and they have to fight very hard to get whatever they get. And you have to keep in mind there's 70 guys on every team. It's very hard. You multiply that by 32 teams. It's very hard to keep that amount of people all committed to the same thing. Very difficult. It's impossible in the NBA, and that's 450 players. And they can't agree on what to do when there's a labor stoppage. They don't, you know, half of them want to sign whatever the owners offer, and half of them want to decertify. Like it's a thing. It's so Demoris is in the middle of all that. He had a lot
For
of
years, for a
years,
long time.
sure, and a lot of fights, some of which are still ongoing, some of which have not been solved by his successor. Who is now for the former head because of some stuff that was going on that the players didn't know about and they didn't like. So it's a very difficult job. And you wind up satisfying almost no one with the job that you wind up doing. So it's a tough job.
The NFL is for years has done a lot with the military. Oh, it's 15 now, we gotta go. And I kind of got to know Gene Upshaw, kind of like, in that fake Washington way, the person's your best friend. And he told me the biggest part of the biggest challenge in his job was you've had these young guys, a lot of whom come from modest means, and all of a sudden they have a lot of money. And he goes, it's the girlfriends and the family members and the high school friends
Always,
trying to shove them aside. Okay, 30 seconds on the pitch, and then we're going to talk to Mary Roach because the book is so fabulous. So the pitch is progressing, everybody. This is our writing
yes.
competition that Chatter will sponsor is sponsoring. I've started to stretch out the timeline a little bit, but we've now got bookstores in California, Illinois, Tennessee, Wisconsin, I think Arizona,
Oh, wow.
who want to be a part of this. I'm going to line up a couple alternates. And what they will do is they will nominate a writer from their area who has a book out. It's now going to be the first part of, hopefully, the first 6 months of 2026, a book out, and someone from that region. And then we have a small panel of judges, and there will be two winners, one fiction, one nonfiction, 5K to the winner. I think 10% to the bookstore owner. I haven't told them this, but I think that'll
Absolutely.
give them
Yes.
extra,
Yes.
right? A little
Like
extra
the
incentive.
person who sold the lottery ticket, the winning lottery ticket, they get a little taste.
Exactly,
Sure.
exactly.
Sure.
But the response has been really, really good. And we don't need too many more bookstores, but if people have, and there needs to be a personal connection. So Hannah Pittard, who was on a couple of weeks ago, great connection, Exile in Bookville in Chicago.
Yeah.
In the same building where Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is taped. They're just kind of into it. And then Claire McLaughlin, who's one of the publicists I know, really knew these people in Wisconsin. So that kind of personal connection, but
Yeah.
really pleasantly surprised at the response. It's really cool.
Awesome. That's great. I mean, it's encouraging.
It is
It's
encouraging, the
encouraging.
enthusiasm. Okay,
Yes.
encouraging, exciting, unbelievable. Mary Roach, welcome to Chatter on Books.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Can
So
you hear
say
me
hi to
okay?
we can hear you just
Yeah.
fine. Todd Jennings is in charge of all the important work. David Aldridge is my partner in crime. I love the cover of Replaceable You,
I do
Adventures in
too.
Human Anatomy. It's fabulous, absolutely fabulous. As I think we warned you and warned you through Aaron, thank you, Aaron, for making this all happen. Your backstory, where are you from? Where did you grow up? Did you always want to be a writer or did you want to be something else?
I grew up in New Hampshire, Etna, New Hampshire, and a small part of that in Vermont. And I liked, I don't remember in high school or college having any interest in writing, but I did find in when I was cleaning out a file cabinet, this little, I should have brought it, this little stapled together thing. It's it says The Book of Penguins, and it's mostly a graphic novel, a lot of drawings. Not a lot of plot. And I believe the there's a spelling error in the title. It says The Book of Penguins, not The Book of
Close
Penguins.
enough. Close enough.
Yeah.
Huh.
So early on, I seem to have some leaning in that way. I think that would probably have been like second grade. I don't know.
Were
So no,
you
I
always a science nerd? Were you always interested?
No, I hated science. I never took science in college. I hated it. I had a good physics teacher, and I kind of enjoyed. He was great.
Yeah.
Not great enough to get me to become a physicist,
Excuse me, your book of penguins, David. What was the first thing you wrote? Do you remember? David is
yes,
awesome.
I wrote a poem when I was 7 years old about chewing gum.
Oh, do you remember it?
Yes, of course I do.
Come on, go ahead. Go ahead. Give us a
No, I'm not
fancy
doing.
version.
No, it's preposterous and awful. And it I was it it's a, it's this is about Mary. It's not about me. Mary,
Okay.
tell me again where in New Hampshire did you are you from?
Etna, which is right outside
Etna.
Hanover. Yeah. You know
Okay.
what? I just remembered. I wrote a poem too, and I got it published in some kids' magazine, and I remember it. You
The
ready?
same thing. Yes, go
You
ahead.
ready? Okay.
Go
It
ahead.
was a limerick. It wasn't dirty. It's not dirty. I'm sorry to say.
All right.
It's a, there once was a fellow named Bruce who built a mechanical moose. He jumped on its back and heard a loud crack and found a connection was loose.
Ah, very good.
Not bad.
Very good. Very
That is
good.
great.
Very good.
Yeah, so
How
probably like fourth grade, fifth grade, I don't know. That's
far is
beautiful.
Etna from Plymouth?
Oh, Plymouth is out on the coast, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So a couple, you know, New Hampshire's tiny, couple hours,
Right.
I'd say.
Couple hours. The
Yeah.
first woman I ever fell in love with was from Plymouth, New Hampshire. So
Oh,
I have a soft
nice.
spot for New
Yeah.
Hampshirites
Was she on a
Yeah,
rock?
nice.
Was she like a siren up on the rock singing? Where is
No,
she today, David?
she was a basketball player.
Oh, nice.
at UNH?
No, she. But we met at American University where we both went to college. So,
Oh, okay. Yeah.
yes. But she's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person.
Still in touch?
Yes, she lives in Hawaii with her husband. Now you talk about a meet cute. So she was a reporter. She covered. She covered the cops down in Key West, Florida. And
Awesome.
one day there was a murder, and she went to cover the murder, and the detective started talking to her about the crime, and they kept talking, and they kept talking, and they're still talking. Isn't
That's so great.
that great?
Oh,
It's a
that
movie.
is so
Come on,
great.
it's hundreds.
Is
Like,
well, if it is a movie, I don't mind playing the husband. I've done this before on podcasts.
That's right.
I can
That's
play
right.
the role of the husband.
That's right. That's right.
That's
Okay, now
like,
talk to Mary about her book,
we'll
please.
talk to Mary about her book, Replaceable You, Adventures in Human Anatomy, which is amazing. Okay, Mary, you've written many very successful books, always with wonderful titles, as I was talking before, but it might be the science behind a soldier's adversaries, the many different kinds. There might be about when wildlife and humans intersect, clash, etc. Why human body parts? And I've listened to some of the interviews, so I think that I know the inspiration story, but give us the inspiration story, please, for Replaceable You.
I often write about the human body. It's kind of an interesting planet, I think, because I didn't study biology or physiology or anatomy in college. It's all kind of new to me. So, and endlessly Interesting. So this one got started. I heard from a reader who is a big Seattle Seahawks fan, and she thought I should write a book about professional football referees, which is kind of a interesting but inappropriate fit for me. Although,
Did she give you a what was the hook? What was the why? And why you?
No real re I think she just wants somebody to write that book. And yeah, no, I don't know. And recently I was telling this story and somebody said, "You should write a book about pro football referees. It's really interesting." I'm like, "Really?" Maybe I was
David, is
wrong.
it Claude? Is it really interesting?
Not that interesting.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. She anyway, I wrote back to her and we corresponded a bit. And she's an elective amputee. She's somebody who had her foot amputated because it didn't work well, but it was a healthy foot. You know, she'd had spina bifida, her spinal cord. There were issues so that caused her foot to grow in a twisted way, and so she couldn't hike or run or do things she wanted to do. And she'd see people with a prosthetic, and she'd be like, "Why can't I have that?" But surgeons would be like, "This is a healthy foot. I can't cut this foot off." And she'd go, "But I can't walk on it." Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. So that kind of got me started in that direction. And then someone else I was talking to, a woman who worked in a, I was thinking about fat as a topic, so I called this woman who works in fat lab. Bella, Evangelia Bellas. And we got to talking, and nothing she said about fat made me want to go in that direction. But she did mention, I don't know, out of the blue, not out of the blue, I don't know how we got to this, but she said she mentioned a study she had seen, a paper by a surgeon who had rebuilt a man's penis. He'd had cancer. He rebuilt it using the guy's middle finger. And I was like, what? Like that.
How does that work?
I was imagining, of course, because it's me, I was imagining the finger like removed intact and the nail right still on it and just installed and like able to move and, you know, kind of go like,
It's got
hey,
some handshake.
hey. But that's not the case. You know, the finger was installed as it for rigidity anyway, so I'm like, I need to meet that surgeon. So now I had two things that were related, and that's kind of how it goes with me. I get a couple things that are sort of similar, and then I think, well, what's the book that could kind of go around that? What would the topic of the book be? And like, and so replaceable body parts, that's where I landed.
It's
So
okay. So the Boston Globe, one of the best things I saw written about yours, one of the most accurate things I saw written about your book, says Roach's books are meticulously researched, beautifully written, and disturbingly funny. And yes, disturbingly funny. It was funny. And again, I was telling Claude and David, I drove all my friends and family bananas over the last couple of weeks, Mary, reading your book and listening to it. Mary did her own audio version, which is an achievement. And I just kept saying to people, oh my God, wait to hear about this. Wait to hear about this. I'm pretty sure we talked about the finger. Just the chapter titles alone are great. To Build a Nose, Give Me Some Skin, Mixed Meats was one of my favorites. Heart in a Box, who knew the heart really can live on without anything else? The cutoff point, it goes on and on and on. So is that how the book came about? You just go down this one path and then you'd hear from somebody else because extraordinary access given to you by scientists, doctors, patients, all sorts of
Yeah,
people. Tell us
extraordinary.
how it came together. And then, I mean,
Yeah.
I could pick through some of these stories, but which ones are your favorites?
Well, extraordinary access, but I have to say for everyone who said yes, there were probably three who either didn't write back or said no. You know, I went to Chengdu, China for the chapter on xenotransplantation, which is gene editing a pig so that their organs are a little more acceptable to the human body. And there are two firms in the US that do this. And both of them took a Zoom meeting with me and then turned it over to the legal department who said no, or just ghosted me. One of them just
These
ghosted
lawyers.
me. But so I'm like, okay, I'll go to China. And China was actually a better setting for that chapter because China, there's no cultural tradition of donating one's organs, so there's a tremendous need. So if you could edit animal organs such that they're acceptable to the immune system, that would be a tremendous boon for
Can you talk
patients.
a little bit? It was fa everything in the book was fascinating, Mary, about what happens with organ donors or lack thereof in China and the organ donor system in the United States. And as I think you pointed out in the book, or somebody pointed out, somebody said in an interview, said the Chinese government, if they wanted to, could just tell people you have to be organ.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Wouldn't it be a lot easier rather than all this genetic messing around? Number one, get everybody to donate, and there's different ways to go about that. I would have thought, you know, it being China, the Chinese government could just sort of say, "It is your patriotic duty to donate to make your organs available." But it comes down to religion. It's a it, there's no tradition of that because it's the human body and all of its organs are perceived as a gift from one's ancestors, and so you don't, it's disrespectful to do anything to mess with the body. So that isn't going to happen there. And the other thing that would be great is if we in this country had an opt-out system where you had to, like in Europe, certain countries in Europe, it's presumed that you're going to be a donor unless you opt out. Here in this country, it's presumed that you won't be unless you opt in.
That's your opportunity.
I think that makes so much sense.
So, but it's probably not going to happen here. But that would be great. There'd be a lot more organs available, and to be nicer, you know, it would be a kinder thing for the pigs.
Okay, let's stick with the pigs. I'm a huge fan of pigs.
I am
Oh, in
too.
there was some
Wrote
disparagement of
your
pigs.
book has a title with pigs in it,
It
so.
does. It was a horrible title with a horribly written book, completely unedited.
Wait,
Other than
what? There's a wait, what's that book?
that, no, don't. It's terrible. It's awful.
Come on.
Moving on. No, someone in your book, Mary, was disparaging of pigs' intellect. Oh, you couldn't teach pigs to do that. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I bet you could because they're very smart. But talk about, because I've always wondered this, you think about genetically DNA, everything else, how much closer monkeys, chimpanzees are to us. But a lot of the research, a lot of this seems to be focused on pigs. So explain to us why that is.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you can blame Hormel. That was
Yes, this is
in the
fascinating.
middle of the last century.
David's like, wait a minute.
What?
David, again, it was a little shocking when you realized Hormel, the giant pork
Yeah.
producer, is
The
a big
pork
part.
people. Yeah. So it was a partnership in the middle of the last century, 40s and 50s and into the 60s. There was this partnership between the Mayo Clinic, the Mayo Institute, and the
In
Hormel.
Minnesota.
Yes, and Hormel also in Minnesota. Hormel there, and they both have research facilities. So that they got together, and the idea was let's breed a smaller pig whose organs will be the right size for a person. Smaller makes them easier to handle in a laboratory setting, and let's study human organs and pig organs. Let's see how similar they are. And as it turns out, they're fairly similar. There's just hundreds of papers looking at renal function in pigs and humans and coronary artery disease in pigs and humans. As it turns out, the pig is a, this is a line from one of their bound papers of this joint project. The pig is a caricature of an obese human because it gets coronary artery disease and is pretty sedentary. This is domestic pigs and it eats garbage.
That sounds about on brand.
So, I mean, they did tons of studies on pigs, looking at, you know, how similar are they to humans. There's even a study on orthodonture in pigs. There's somebody put braces on pigs. I mean, there's three volumes of these studies of looking at pigs and how much of an analog they could be for human beings. So that's and once we have all that information about pigs, that's just the path that science went down. So pigs, even today, are the ones that get used.
Pigs aren't pigs omnivores. They will eat anything, correct?
Yes, they are
Yeah.
omnivores.
There's a really horrifying plot going back to our obsession with horrific things. There's a great Criminal Minds episode where the horrible psycho, serial murderer kills his people and then feeds them to his pigs on the pig farm.
Oh, yeah. Well, also in Deadwood. Did you ever see Deadwood,
Did
that
not see.
fabulous Western with
Oh, yeah.
Well, the guy, there was a guy there when someone was killed, they'd take it over to the pig the guy with the pigs.
I think I do think pigs are, for the record, and pigs are maligned. They're very, very smart.
They are. No, they are very
Very
smart.
smart.
They are very smart.
Okay.
Merrick, can I ask you something? I mean, we're in a odd era in our country right now. But I have to realize that we've had eras like this before, where science and progress kind of ran into the shoals of disbelievers and well-funded opposition. And with your book, I mean, it just seems to me like this is very logical that in 50 years, in 100 years, we will have incredibly advanced how we bring new body parts into the human body unless we decide not to. Why?
Yeah. Yes.
It's really our choice, right? And so I just
Right.
wonder where you think that's going. Where do you think that's going to wind up?
Yeah. Well, this book was going into production right around the time that Doge got busy, and I actually added an epilogue because I felt like I needed to check in with these labs and these people that I had spoken to say, "Are you okay? Has your project been
Are you still
cut?
there?
Are you still
Yeah.
there? Are you going to be able to continue?" And a lot of them were, it was early on, and they were like, we don't know yet what this holds. I don't know, because some of these were years long, these projects, but there were rumors going around that even if you'd sign a contract for, a long-term study, that could be cut. And so it's this, it's just devastating, just for patients. And also for, young scientists whose careers are now being derailed. They're looking to start careers overseas. It's devastating for this country in terms of competitiveness in technology and innovation. And it just doesn't make any sense to me at all to be cutting these things, to be cutting biomedical research. There's so much we're at such an exciting time right now in terms of, cell therapy, bioprinting, all of xenotransplantation. I mean, that's just stuff that I was looking at. I mean, there's just tremendous numbers of things going on and things that are going to get rolling fast because of AI. I mean, AI, whatever you want to say about AI, and there's a lot to say, but one of the things it is good for is biomedical research and helping things, speed things along. So it should be a really exciting time, but then there's this kind of somebody threw a wrench into it.
A big cloud. Can you talk a little bit, Mary, about bioprinting? Because that was one of the most interesting conversations in your book. On the one hand, tremendous advances. On another hand, this stark reality, okay, nothing makes body parts like the body itself. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to lower my expectations. I was very hopeful that there might be something for me in the not too distant future.
Well,
No. But
yeah.
then some of the timelines that some of the people you talk to are not that far out on some of these things. But anyways,
Yeah.
bioprinting is pretty fascinating.
It is. It's really interesting, and it's but really challenging. I mean, I spent a fair amount of time with people who are trying to who are printing muscle, which you would think, as opposed to a whole complex organ with like five different types of cells, where you'd need five different extruder heads if you're doing extrusion. That is the method I looked into. You'd think, okay, it's just, you got the cells and you're going to print them, but it turns out you have to align them according to what the function of that muscle is. Like for a hamstring muscle, they can be aligned in parallel. For a shoulder muscle, they're more like in a fan shape because the shoulder is very, versatile in how it can move. The heart, you've got to align them in like a helix because it twists slightly as it pumps, which that helps it pump more volume. You've got to feed these cells. You've got the you, every cell needs some kind of blood supply. So are you gonna print that, or are you gonna hope that the body grows those cells itself? Like it, the body, if you gain weight, your body will grow.
Not listen to his. I know
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That was absolutely fascinating to me. Okay, you covered so many different parts of the body and so many different
Well, I
technologies and
think
science advancements and all those kinds of things.
one
Through
is
all of your
something.
meticulous research, did something go to you, just go, oh my God? I mean, or what was your favorite? thing that you learned working on this book?
You know, I was really impressed with the flexibility of the human body. Okay, so you take some you take a part from a say a pig or another person, you're going to deal with the human immune system. So you're going to deal with the pushback, your body going, I don't want that. So
Rejection.
rejection, right? So, but you did, what was amazing to me is you can take one part of the body and turn it into something else. For example, the rectum works almost like a third lung in a case where, say, you had a very premature baby whose lungs weren't able to function, rather than put that infant on a positive pressure ventilator, which really can damage the lungs, right? You know,
Right,
it's
we
they're
hear them.
too delicate. So you can use the mucosa of the rectum to absorb oxygen. You know, you can build you can build a urethra from the inside of the cheek because that's tissue that's used to being moist, and you want that for a urethra. So you can take a rectangle from right in there, fold it up, install it as a urethra. You can turn a segment of the intestine into a vagina, which, when you think about it, you know, it's pink, it's moist, it's stretchy.
What more do you need?
What more do you need?
Moist and stretchy. I think that's the tagline for the show, ladies and
I'm not
gentlemen.
gonna
Could
stretch
be.
Oh my gosh,
Anyway, fantastic.
I was just impressed with how agreeable our bodies are when we ask them, one part to serve as something different.
So somewhere in there, I think, didn't you hear, like, the ableness of the human body? Like, sure, okay, you want to do this, we can do that.
Okay, I'll give it a whirl.
Let's get you out with this. We're not going to get rid of you completely, but let's get you out with this one on the book. Did your research and writing cause you to change any of your behavior? Do you take care of yourself differently? Are you optimistic about something that maybe you might want to fix down the road? Did it change you in any way?
I think it made me a little more optimistic about things like joint replacement. To see how far that's come. I mean, the first hip replacement was 1938. I mean, we've and now the complication rate is below 1%. It's really same at cataract surgery as well. Those are things that it's for.
The whole chapter on the Mongolian eyeball, just that's fantastic. I mean, if you know anything about Mongolia, I know just enough to be dangerous. It's not where you would expect them to be doing the kinds of things that you shared in the book. So it was fantastic.
Oh
Okay.
yeah, no, it was a lot of fun to be there.
Mongolia, China. What, Mongolia, was that the furthest you went in your research?
I think so. Yeah, I was also in the country of Georgia, but that's not as
Right.
long.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot easier to get around than Mongolia. Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Chatterheads, it's Jamie here with a couple of quick items before you go. First of all, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your time. There are, however, a few things you can do to help us keep Chatter chugging along. Of course, you can follow us in all the usual places, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join us on Patreon for bonus outtakes from the show, including Tori's rapid-fire lightning round with the guest and some pre- and post-show persiflage that we usually edit out. Go to chatteronbooks.com to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, where you'll get a sneak peek at the upcoming authors. And don't forget, if you're buying books, please try bookshop.org. It's easy, it's online, and the best thing is you'll be supporting your favorite independent bookstores and affiliates like Chatter on Books. So download us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review on Apple if you're feeling so disposed. But, most importantly, just stay in touch. Send questions, comments, ideas, and even insults to info@chatteronbooks.com. That's info@chatteronbooks.com. And thanks again for listening. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.
Everybody, Claude, David, Mary, most of all, thank you so much. We are back in a couple of weeks with Ann Butler, whose book is Wife, Mother, Spy, which is exactly what it sounds like. She's a wife, she's a mother, she's a spy. Very, very cool. From the DMV. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Those of you in the DMV, November 10th, Caddies on Cordell. Drinks are on somebody, so we hope you can join us there. But thank you all for listening. And we're done.